This is episode 27 of season 17, Working at Netflix. As regular listeners of Geek Speak will know, I work for Netflix. In fact, we record at Netflix almost every week in one of the conference rooms. And I'm continually debating on how much I share about what the company is like internally. I don't want to be speaking for the company. You know, I want to speak for myself. I happen to work at the company. But there's some really amazing things that happen here from a business perspective. It's not just technical. And the technical stuff, of course, I feel comfortable talking about all the time. You know, how Objective-C works or how you compile stuff in iOS and things. Because I do that and it's just general knowledge and that's fine. I can share some of that. But the actual how the company runs, I'm always not sure how much to share. So I decided to talk to a colleague of mine, Brennan Gregg is an industry expert in computer performance and cloud computing. He's a senior performance architect at Netflix, where he does performance design, evaluation, analysis, and tuning. And he is the author of Systems Performance, published by Prentice Hall. Brennan Gregg is a systems performance engineer. He takes a look at how things work when they run. And he's been in an internal podcast with me talking about all the stuff he's done internally at the company. And when chatting with him, I thought it'd be great to have him on GeekSpeak. And then I just saw a blog post that he actually has three blog posts, one a year, about what it's like to work at Netflix. So, Brennan Gregg, thank you for joining me here on GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having me, Lyle. And it's great to talk about what it's like to work at Netflix. And this is also my personal opinion. So this is not a company official voice. So I think it might be interesting for people to hear my personal take on what I feel like it's been like to work here.
Yeah, I agree. What was the impetus to writing these blog posts about what it's like to work, to be so public about what it's like to work at Netflix? Why'd you do it?
Well, I'd heard about Netflix before I joined, and there were articles that discussed Netflix with a culture of fear and some negative things about Netflix, and also some positive things about Netflix, and I really didn't know. And when I started working here, I realized that it was a really awesome company, and the culture is really working out for us. And as an engineer, when I find an awesome technology, I feel compelled to share it and like share the love and get other people to use it as well. And I just felt the same with the culture. It's something that we've engineered the culture so it really works well for the people in the company. And it just seemed natural that I'd be sharing it on my blog like I share other great technologies. In particular, that if you think about it, there's a lot of opinions and assumptions people make about Netflix. They might read the culture deck, they hear about how we're top performers, and they're trying to find, there must be a gotcha with that, there must be some catch to this. And people kind of, they run away with this and paint this dark picture of what it must truly be like at Netflix. And it's kind of like, you've worked on a technology for a long time and people are saying in public, well, I haven't used the technology, but here's all my assumptions about why it must be bad.
Yeah.
As an engineer, you'd be like, hang on, hold on a moment. I've used the technology for years now and let me tell you how good it is. And I'm happy to create. I understand why you've got these assumptions about the technology, but let me help you out. Let me share what it's really like.
Yeah. Well, okay, so what was your perspective, taking back, you know, 3 years or so, what was your perspective on what Netflix would be like from a cultural perspective?
Well, I wasn't entirely sure, and I didn't actually know anybody at Netflix, apart from Adrian Cockcroft, who I sort of knew. I'd known that Netflix had pushed the envelope with cloud computing, mm-hmm. and so Netflix were doing great things with microservices, and obviously had a culture that encouraged that.
And why is that interesting for you, microservices?
I'm a performance engineer, and the way microservices are used at Netflix and the way they auto-scale is a whole different era of performance engineering. Mm. Back when I started doing performance engineering, companies would buy mainframes, and there would be this study, a pre-deployment study to ensure that the workload that you want to run will actually run on this giant refrigerator-sized mainframe.
Yeah.
Before you purchased it, before it showed up on site. And so there's this whole engineering about modeling a workload and applying it. It's really interesting and can still be useful material. But nowadays, we can just deploy in the cloud and we can try things out. And the cloud can elastically scale and it can ramp up as the workload increases. So as a performance engineer, this is a massive change in what I do day to day.
Right. You can have a fully deployed system that's functioning really well from a perspective of service, you know, metrics and such, but really have bad performance in it as well because of the scaling. So there's things that can be hidden in it, and there's, of course, totally new challenges that are different than in the mainframe space. Cool.
And so, so Netflix was the future, and Netflix was pioneering a lot of this, and you know, I was really interested in joining it and finding out from the inside what that was like.
So this culture of fear, the slide deck, let's get into that a little bit because not everybody is really aware of this. Netflix has this culture deck that's basically a whole bunch of slides up on the website, and when you interview here, the recommendation is to read that thing first and really understand it. And it goes through quite a few things. And some of that stuff that goes through, why don't you talk about some of the stuff that you've mentioned in your blog that's in that document that's actually real?
So I find the whole culture deck real. And you're right, when you interview with Netflix, and I had this myself, the recruiters said, please read the culture deck. And so the culture deck is not this pretty document. It clearly looks like an internal document. And I was reading through it, and a lot of it I really liked, and it talked about freedom and responsibility, about how engineers, you're free to do the right thing for the company so long as you take responsibility. If it breaks, who's going to support it? And it talked about innovation and professionalism and not having brilliant jerks. And so there were a lot of aspects, like pretty much the whole culture deck I was excited about. It did talk about top performers as well, mm-hmm. and there were some slides about how if you join and you end up not being a top performer, then you might be given a generous severance package. And I think that's kind of what has led people to assume that there's this culture of fear.
Right. And or that it's kind of cutthroat, or you know, they're always looking to get rid of people and stuff.
There might be cutthroat. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know before I joined Netflix that maybe everyone's working really long hours. I actually asked that in the interview process. It's like, how long of hours do people work in the office?
Yeah.
And at one point, I was as part of the pre-interview meetings, I was at the office late in the afternoon, and you know, after 5 o'clock, people were going home. I was like, "Well, I can see that people are going home, so like that's a good thing."
And that's the talks about the slide deck is really about this work-life balance,
right?
That not making the work be your entire life aspect of it,
right? So I think the culture of fear. It's you know, at other companies. You know, I've heard that you may have the company wants to do, maybe the company needs to do cuts, and people are already working under a culture of fear. At so many companies, they are money driven, and mm-hmm. departments need to make their departmental goals and their quarterly goals.
And one way to phrase that or think of that, depending on your psychology, is to think of that as a fear based thing. The other thing, think about that as a business based thing. I mean, you can be completely non-fearful in that environment and still be at risk all the time.
Right.
So to be clear, I mean, from my perspective, there's not a culture of fear here. I don't see that. And I have seen people let go, you know, that's happened. And every time that's happened, I went right away, oh, that kind of makes sense. Or I had to go ask, you know, what happened there? And there was, you know, slightly quiet in the sense that there wasn't really public. But every time it's been pretty clear why a person's been asked to go. And so I'm not a manager, so I've never let anybody go, but I'm sure it's a challenging thing to do in any case. So have you felt that there was a culture of fear?
No, I have not experienced a culture of fear. And I've experienced where some colleagues have been let go.
Yeah.
Not that many, like most people I joined and were working with 3 years ago are still here. But in each case, it seems that, and if you read the culture deck, this shouldn't be a surprise. Netflix does this in a professional manner. And so people are told that you need to look at working on different projects and you need to up your game. People are given plenty of warning that maybe it's not going to work out and maybe they should try something else.
That aspect of really clear feedback and kind of raw feedback is probably much more, you're not aware of that until after you've started. This idea that someone's going to come to you and say, this is how you're messing up and this is how you can improve. And that can come from anybody, from any level,
right?
Which is not usual. Normally, you kind of buffer yourself in an environment, in other companies I've worked at, you kind of buffer yourself and are friendly with people. And you might say something bad about that person's performance, probably not to them, but to their manager. and the manager's responsible to take it over. It's not like that here. Here we're kind of always giving people feedback on honest feedback.
Yes, that's right. It's because we feel that we're part of a team, and I actually play on a sports team. I was doing practice for the Netflix cricket team last night.
I did not know we had a cricket team, but it does make sense.
Yeah. We do have a cricket team, and in practice, people comment on each other because we want each other to be better players. And like, I was bowling no balls, and I was getting told I was bowling no balls, and I needed to bowl behind the line.
What does that mean in cricket?
It means I've stepped over the line when I was doing a delivery. Okay. And like this idea of we're a team and we're giving each other feedback as we're practicing is similar to at Netflix. We're giving each other feedback because we want each other to be better players.
Yeah.
And it's not criticism. It's constructive. It's like, hey, like I've been telling engineers, I want you to try out this other software or this other tool or this other procedure, and it's because I want them to be better as a team.
Yeah, I've gotten feedback earlier on in my career at Netflix. I was getting pretty emotionally tied into changes that were occurring, and I was getting flippant in meetings, like not in an angry yelling thing, but showing my emotion enough or being emotional enough that it became a detriment at some level. And two different people that I work with, a manager and a colleague, said, hey, you know, in those meetings when you're having that experience, just calm yourself down. And really, like, pretty personal critique. And I don't do that anymore in meetings. Like, it allowed me to change, which is, it's a neat experience.
Yeah, at Netflix, we're told to have the courage to be able to give critical feedback to people to help them improve. So it's, yeah, there's just so many things about the culture deck that I feel it different here compared to many other companies, and it works really well.
Yeah. I was just experiencing this. Someone was complaining about how they had an old computer and they're going to get a newer computer, or a work computer. I can't recall. It was on Twitter somewhere. They're going to get a work computer, but they're going to order this one version and it's not the version that was hopeful. And there was just frustration about not having the tools at your disposal at companies. And I just kind of publicly wrote back to them, that's just not like that. And that's like, you know, where we work, it's if I need a piece of equipment that's going to make my job better, I just buy it and get reimbursed. And I don't think anybody even approves that. It's just a standard process where we're trusted to do the right thing for the company.
Yeah, that's, you're right. And that's part of the culture deck. It's where we're treated like adults. Yeah. And where it's also part of the culture deck, it's act in Netflix's best interest. And so at some companies, if you have to purchase something, you need to purchase a PC or vacation, you have to – it's as though you're proven guilty – you're assumed guilty until proven innocent. And yeah, you have to fill out forms and get approvals. With Netflix, you buy whatever you want. You expense it. It's automatically approved.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've done vacations and I've had to buy hardware, and that's it. It's immediately approved. And it's because we hire – as we say, fully formed adults,
yeah,
people who aren't going to abuse the system because they're always acting in Netflix's best interest. And maybe one day we'll hire someone who does abuse it, and then we'll deal with that person, and that's it. I think the philosophy of – I think it works much better this way because it doesn't interfere with everyone. Everyone does the right thing. Maybe one person will abuse the system one day and they'll be dealt with separately, but the company's not going to change the policy and make everyone go through hoops next time they want to buy a pen or something.
No, yeah. And that's the thing that's so ridiculous when you have too much process in place. You know, the long and the short of it is if you feel like you need some piece of equipment, like a new laptop, right? Whether you're going to be functional as an employee or not without that laptop is almost never really in the question in a large process organization. It's really about did you cross on do all these forms. So the actual underlying question of whether you need a laptop or not has already been answered by you. And the rest of it's just the bureaucracy. So we just don't have that here, which is kind of nice. You are relatively well known as a developer and an influencer in the code experience in general. Prior to starting here 3 years ago, you had a book out. You had some good check marks on your belt of performance work. How were you recruited? How did Netflix come and say you should come here?
You know, I got some cold call emails from talent. I guess they looked at my LinkedIn or something and encouraged me to join a performance team. And I'd heard a lot of things about Netflix, a lot of negative things. It's this culture of fear,
right.
And also lots of positive things. And so I wasn't sure about it. And also didn't really know anyone apart from Adrian, who then left before I joined. And what really helped it for me was I was at some conferences and I saw a talk by Dan Jacobson and I saw another talk by Coben Watson. And these are senior engineers. And Coben was going through these really gritty, deep details, engineering details, but doing it in just a very calm, relaxed manner. It's like, this is normal for us. This is what we deal with. This is how we deploy. And I think for many people, if they're going through those sort of details, there would be four-letter words and there would be waving of arms because it's unusual and at the extreme. But
was this about like a scaling on EC2 or something?
Yeah,
what was it?
Coben was talking about performance on EC2 and how we manage it all. It's some really amazing stuff. And
EC2 is, of course, Amazon scalable cloud system. So when we talk about cloud, we're talking about in a system devised by Amazon that we actually use for all our services.
So yeah, I mean, he talked about it. It was just, this is just part of the job. It's not amazing for us. This is just what we do. And I found that quite impressive, and also the level of detail. And I started responding to the recruiters, and I ended up talking to Dan Jacobson, who's one of the managers. And then I later talked to Coben Watson, and they were both looking to hire me into different roles. Mm-hmm. And so I had a number of I actually came down to Netflix and met with Coben, had a number of meetings with him, and talked about what it would mean for me to join Netflix. I was struggling with it because I didn't know anyone. And so I was felt like I was coming in cold. Mm-hmm. So I had lots of questions. And I think what really...
Were you moving from San Francisco?
Yeah, from San Francisco.
Okay. And are you still there in San Francisco taking the shuttle down? Or you moved?
Oh, no, I moved down to Los Gatos.
Closer? Okay.
And so I was talking to Coben. I think what really sold it for me is if I join a company, I want to make sure that I'm useful, that I'm doing things the company will value. And you know, at other companies, because I ended up interviewing with 12 different companies, and I had to stop at 12 because it's like, man, interviewing is hard work when you have that many companies to deal with. And at some of the other companies, I knew people, and they could tell me, Brendan, I know you'll do this role really well. I'd love to have you join. And I lacked that at Netflix. I didn't have anyone who could tell me, I know you'll perform really well, and it's a good fit for your skill set. So I told Coben, it's like, please write a list of projects I could work on if I joined. And he did. He wrote a list of like, here's 12 different projects that would bring value to Netflix that I think that you would be able to do. It was just a bullet point list of 12 items. And I looked at the list and thought, yeah, I can do this. And so that really good. Like flipped the switch, and it's like, okay, let's go interview and let's find out if I can do it. And then I talked more to the recruiters, and they brought me in for the full day of interviews.
Yeah, the full day interviews are interesting. Did you do I'm assuming you didn't do an engineering test at that point, did you? Some teams actually have engineering tests where they kind of give you an assignment.
Yeah, I didn't do an engineering test, no.
Yeah, since you have a book out and everything, you're pretty well known that you know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, but it's still worthwhile to test.
Do you interview people now?
Yes, as part of working at Netflix, a lot of us do interviews.
And how do you run them? What do you look for?
What I like to do is find out how deep people can go. I also like to give people a good interview that I would like to receive in return. Uh-huh. And like, for example, in my interview process at Netflix, there was no gotcha questions. There's no like, here's a whiteboard algorithm trivia, please solve it. And that's kind of, it's not the primary thing you do as a performance engineer is to whiteboard some code. The primary thing you do is debugging things, getting to the bottom of things and evaluating things. But what I like to do for other people is I'll read their resume, I'll get to understand them before the interview, so I've done some prep. And I'll go through the resume and try and find some topics that we have common ground on. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, oh, I see you've worked on TCP/IP internals, or I see you've worked on MySQL performance, or you've worked on this kernel area or that. Let's talk about it. And then I'll ask, like, I'll pose scenarios. Let's say you saw this and that. How would you debug it? Or you did this project. Like, tell me what you exactly did. And then I'll just keep going deeper because I've picked some projects that we have common ground.
Yeah.
I've worked on a lot of things, so it's something I can do. I think only out of many, many interviews, there was only once where I looked at a CV and thought, wow, there's just nothing they've done that I've done, so I probably shouldn't interview this person. But for everyone else, there's been some project
that you can kind of go deeper into.
I can go deeper, and it's great because I usually hit the point where people realize, I'm just going to keep on going deeper because I've done this before. And so people get to the point where like, okay, like that's as far as I went. Like,
yeah.
It's like, okay, great. It's good to know where that depth is.
So Colburn gives you a list of things you might be able to do and you go, yeah, let's do this. And then you go through the interview process. Obviously you got hired. Did you actually then work for Colburn or work with Colburn?
Yeah, I worked for Coburn on a performance team, and Coburn's since been promoted. So we have a new manager. Mm-hmm. And in my first weeks at Netflix, it was amazing. I think the first meeting I had, I was told, in this meeting, there's two camps of thought about doing this engineering project, and we're going to battle it out, and we're going to get to the bottom of it in this meeting. Now,
how many people in the meeting?
There must have been 10 people in the meeting.
Okay.
And so I'm picturing like what can be a really nasty fight and like virtual chair throwing. But what I experienced was a very professional meeting where engineers listed pros and cons. There were no tempers,
right,
or flared emotions.
People didn't seem attached to the outcome. They seemed attached to like, well, what's the best way to solve this
problem? Yeah, people were attached to, you know, there were no egos.
Like, yeah. Right? People
were attached to getting to the bottom of, you know, what's best for Netflix.
And that is a really great experience of going to a room of a lot of people with different opinions, and the egos are just really low key.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing. And the meeting ended, and like no one's heart rate got up, and like everyone wanted the best outcome, and we fleshed it out. And I was like, wow, that's what engineering meetings should be like.
Yeah.
It's like where you just focus on the technology. It's not about battling each other personally. It's not about departmental politics or lines in the sand. It's just about doing your job.
We just had an engineering thing, a UI thing. It was a group of like six of us. We wanted to tackle this problem, and we brought it together and started working on it. But halfway through the meeting, it became clear that we didn't have enough of the questions we were asking answered. So someone was like, let me dive into that idea and get back to everybody. And a couple days later, there's a pull request just so the idea could be shared, and a meeting a little bit later, and we all then talked about it. What is wonderful, because lots of times what will happen in one of those meetings, and we called the first meeting short, because lots of times what will happen is you'll go down both paths and kind of work things through quite of a ways before answering that first question. And this was just like, oh, we don't have a question. Let's go answer the question, and then we'll be back. Felt very functional in that regard as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are quick to bring evidence, like you said, and there's also a lot of mutual respect because Netflix hires experts. And so you can have a meeting where everyone has expertise on topics. And so you can question things technically, but people are bringing their best game to the meeting. And it's really great to work with a number of other experts and think, wow, you know, you really understand that area well, and I understand this other area really well, and we're combining to come up with something great.
Have you ever in your career kind of been in a situation where you weren't you were the expert and there wasn't anybody to lean on?
Yeah, I mean that's happened, and
yeah, me too.
You spend a lot of time teaching other people, and
it's ego boosting. I mean, it does feel good when you're like the smartest person in that topic area,
right? But you know, one exercise I personally do is at the end of every year is I look back on the previous year and say, how have I progressed for the past year? And if for 2 years in a row I've not progressed my career-wise, it's time to find another job.
Yeah.
And at Netflix, you know, I'm 3 years in and there's just so many other experts I want to learn from and that I can learn from because they're happy to work with me. And yeah, it's a great feeling. But yeah, in the past you can be at companies where you're it. And, you know, at the end of a year, the end of 2 years, You've helped a lot of other people develop expertise, which has value to the company, but you've stagnated.
Yeah.
So you haven't really learned that much more yourself.
So did you get to tackle some of those ideas that Coburn had originally said, we need these problems? Were those some of the things you first tackled?
Yeah. So one of the concerns I had before I joined Netflix was I'd used a tracing tool called Dtrace, and I was an expert with it. But that didn't run on Linux, and the Netflix cloud was Linux. And so one of the projects was, I talked about is, well, how about I help fix advanced tracing for Linux? And you know, I talked about this before in the interviews, and the reaction was, well, if that's useful for Netflix, then go for it. That can be a project, and
yeah,
you can help get that done.
Can you tell us what a tracer is?
It's an advanced instrumentation tool. You can point it at software or hardware events, and it will give you basically – It can be a massive log or a summary of information, and it helps developers pinpoint where in their code is hot or how to improve performance. So it's a way of getting lots and lots of metrics and information out of a running system.
And one way to think about it is we talk about these kind of high-level languages where they're verbose in the sense that there's a lot to be able to say in this language. And that, of course, is not really what's happening at the processor and the memory space. What's really happening there is bit register shifting and a whole bunch of hardware-level things. And so there's a whole translation layer. So when I think of the program I've written as what it's doing, when you really get down lower and lower into what it's actually doing, it performs differently than I may expect. And it's unpredictable, potentially. Well, predictable, but not by me necessarily as a programmer. So this tool allows you to kind of go, your code runs like this on the processor. It's kind of an analysis as low down as you can get about what's actually happening.
It's very low down, but there's one step that's lower than a tracer, and that's called PMCs, for performance monitoring counters. And they're these hardware registers on CPUs that can tell you, I had a level 2 cache miss, a hardware cache miss, and I had stall cycles. And that was the other big concern I had about joining Netflix, was that the EC2, Amazon's cloud, did not provide access to PMCs.
Uh-huh.
And so those are my two big concerns, because as a performance engineer, I needed tracers to get to the bottom of the software, and I needed PMCs to drill down into the CPU.
So the fundamental tools you wanted to be able to use couldn't really work in the infrastructure we were using.
That's right. And yeah. So that was my big concern, but I kind of suspected if I joined, then out of necessity, I would help fix them. And so now 3 years on, I've helped fix both. And So
you've done like BCC /BPF, which is tracing on Linux.
That's right.
And so that's kind of like Dtrace, but for Linux.
That's right. And so that can now serve the needs we have at Netflix for tracing. And only a month ago, we finally went public and launched PMC access on EC2, which is another big project I was involved in. And so now I can get into the CPUs. So I'm pretty happy at Netflix now because
yeah.
My two big concerns, done. And so it's now looking at the next things to work on.
Well, so those are two big concerns to actually do the work you do, and that's what you've done the last 3 years. Is that kind of a good way to say it?
Those are big projects. And yeah. so those are the two big technical concerns before I joined Netflix of, I need these technologies and I won't have them. How on earth am I going to survive?
Yeah.
And so, I've helped create them, but of course I had other concerns, like the culture of fear, which turned out not really to be true, and also Los Gatos. It's like Netflix was pretty far south in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and I used to live in San Francisco, and then I moved out into the East Bay, and so I was living as far out as Walnut Creek, and Los Gatos seemed like another planet, and I drove around. It's like, oh, I'm not sure about this, and then I moved in. It's like, it's totally fine. It's like, I actually enjoy it down here, and it works. And also, I had this big fear that I'd be too far away from the rest of Silicon Valley because Los Gatos is the bottom tip. But I play on the Netflix cricket team, and from time to time we have to go to the Google soccer field. That's where we play the mm-hmm. Google Premiership League games. And so I'm familiar with the drive from Netflix to Google. It's really not that bad.
Yeah.
And also I've visited Facebook several times, and that's not bad either. And so it's
so you don't feel disconnected from that
perspective? No, I don't feel disconnected.
You also go and do talks sometimes at different conferences, right?
Yes. And so
that's another way to stay connected with different technology, different groups.
Yeah, and again, Netflix is, as part of the culture, is acting Netflix's best interest. It's and I've got the freedom and opportunity and responsibility to go and do that. And so I've given quite a number of performance talks at conferences. It's been pretty fun.
Congratulations on getting the metric stuff that you needed in EC2. That sounds like it must have been a big project to get that finished.
Thanks.
I didn't know that you'd done that. That's really great. Hi, you're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. I'm speaking with Brendan Gregg. He's a fellow co-worker at Netflix with me. And we're talking about what it's like to work at the Netflix company. If you want to learn more about the program you're listening to right now, you can go to geekspeak.org. We have more information and notes about today's episode and a whole archive of shows going back for you. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for the rest of our conversation. Why are you deciding to be public in working here? Is it because you said that earlier that you see engineering problems that get solved, you want to share that, solve it. Do you want this kind of way of running a business to be spread and to go to other companies? Is that kind of what the thought process is?
Absolutely. And Netflix has really cracked it and cracked the company culture in a way that I think is great for employees. And it would be great if we could have a positive influence to other companies as well. If they could, maybe they can't implement the whole culture deck, but if they can take some of the ideas and at least become better. I mean, Netflix has just cracked. There's been so many myths that I believe to be true in my career until I came to Netflix, like that companies can't be too good to employees because you have to be at some level of discomfort. If you're too comfortable, then it's not in the company's best interest. It's this sort of idea that we can't be too good to employees. We have to keep them a little bit uncomfortable, and
the thumbscrews have to be on a little bit.
Yeah, thumbscrews have to be on a little bit, and
you can't have everything. Where do you think that comes from? Where do you think that idea comes from?
It's just assumptions, and those assumptions become part of a company culture. It's like working at companies, and like, can I take taxis to this event? It's like, oh no, we need to be fiscally responsible, and we need to take buses and public transport. It's like, well, you know, if I take a taxi and take my laptop and do work, and like my dollars per hour value I bring to the company is worth a lot more than the delta between a taxi and like standing on a crowded train.
Yeah.
But this whole notion, but the company just, even though it's dumb, even though this dumb thing doesn't make sense, we need to do it anyway because it's an unquestionable truth about business is that sometimes you have to do dumb things. And so that's what I cracked at Netflix. It's like, no, it's not an unquestionable truth. You can question it. You can change culture. You can, all these things, these dumb things happen at companies, but nobody can fix them because they just have to happen. Like, that's not true at all. Like, Netflix doesn't do the dumb things. If we did dumb things, we'd be like, well, let's change that.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to try to explain that to people. You know, the time off and vacation thing is a great example. I have colleagues that are also engineers and have a long history. And when I explained to them I started working at Netflix and that, you know, how many, they say things like, how much vacation you get? I said, actually, the vacation's undefined. You take what you think you should take. And they're like, well, what stops you from just not going to work? I'm like, well, because you have a job. It's funny because I have this ongoing kind of banter with a friend of mine who does not get this idea. And it's hard to explain except for to say, you know, when you're a responsible person, you do responsible things. It's as easy as that. What do you think about the vacation? How much vacation do you take?
So I've been taking between 3 and 4 weeks each year. And yeah, I think the vacation policy makes sense. And for me, it's like I pick a quarter and think, okay, I'm going to be in India for 3 weeks in this quarter and manage my projects around it and
let other people know.
Yeah, and adjust. And it's totally fine. Like if I needed more vacation, I'd take it. In fact, I'm taking a few days off next week just for a break because I felt I told my manager about it yesterday.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So
we have in our group, we have a pretty good ability for people to cover us because, you know, there's a lot of us that do the same type of task. I don't know if it's the same for you. And so we just put stuff in calendar form. That's a shared calendar where it shows where people are going and leaving. And it pretty much resolves itself. Sometimes I'll mention it to people, you know, I'm taking this time off. But lots of times it's just kind of whatever I edit and share is how people find out. Pretty easy.
Yeah, but you made a good point. It's why wouldn't I take like 6 months vacation if I'm allowed to?
That's a great question.
I want to, like, I'm excited about the projects I'm doing at Netflix and I want to get them done. I don't want to think in 6 months from now I wouldn't have done them.
Right.
It's like, well, I kind of want to do it. Like, it's nice to have a vacation and I will take them, but I'm also motivated to get these projects done that I enjoy doing. So,
yeah. It is interesting, though. There's this, how do you decide not, like, why do we decide not to? I guess part of it is that we fit here because we want to work. We enjoy what we're doing and we're engaged in it.
And we're self-motivated.
Yeah, and that's the kind of people we hire. So if you weren't self-motivated, you wouldn't be getting the job done. You'd probably take more time off. I guess it wouldn't work out here, I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah.
So the cultural deck is true, and it's a fun thing to read if you want to read it. I got all excited about it when I first read it and wasn't sure it was true. And held on to that idea of like, is this really true throughout after the interview process? And then started working here and really got, oh, yep, totally. Responsibility and freedom is core.
Yep. And, you know, I think it's great that it's public because at other companies, they do have a culture.
Yeah.
But the culture, you learn it through trial and error. or you'll learn it through word of mouth. And so you join and you try to do things. It's like, well, this other department, they're doing something silly. They're picking the wrong software. I'll help them out. It's like, oh, you can't talk to that other department. There's interdepartment politics, all these crazy things. And so you discover that actually, well, there's a lot of culture within this company about things you can and can't do. Netflix is open about it. It's like, here it is. It's public. Go read it. And if you don't like it, it helps people self-select. Mm-hmm. And so if you read it and you think, wow, this we want top performers, we want people who will deliver and work well with other great colleagues. We don't accept brilliant jerks. You might look at that and think, well, I don't think I'm going to work. It's not going to work out for me there. And that's okay. Like, Netflix is not for everyone.
Sure.
It's.
But I think that some of the ideas of respecting employees and giving a bit of freedom and less bureaucracy is something that could scale to other places. And I'm always curious about that. I'd love to see another company go, yeah, we want to try to produce that, and how that would actually work. Because it's things like you get rid of all the forms you can imagine. You get rid of the processes. We have very loose ideas of how we decide to deploy an application. You know, I mean, everybody decides how to do that themselves. And that allows us to move quicker in the sense that a small team decides, well, the iOS app is going out today, you know, and it's not a juggernaut kind of management flow. At the same time, that only kind of works is everybody is really on top of their game, right? You can't have someone be doing a flippant thing or you'll have problems.
Yeah, and this is true of other companies where you have people who they're fine engineers and they're great people, but they're kind of in the wrong role. And if you try to get an application off the ground, you're trying to deploy things, as part of the company, you have to work with people who are just the wrong people in the wrong jobs. Mm. And then you get bogged down and things go awry. With Netflix, everyone you interact with who you may need help with to deploy something, which has been minimized because we minimize bureaucracy, everyone is the right person in that job.
It's true.
And so things just move so much faster. You don't waste – man, you don't waste time beating your head against – it's like, why is this person in this role? Yeah. And it's nothing negative about the person. It's a great person. It's just you're in the wrong role. Like, you don't have the skill set for what you're doing. And you just don't encounter that at Netflix.
Were you hired – you're Australian by birth.
Yeah.
Were you hired at Netflix with green card, with citizenship? What was the process and the legality of coming to Netflix?
So I was a H-1B worker when I applied to work at Netflix. And I had a lot of – as part of the interview process, I wanted them to get a green card as quick as possible.
Sure.
And as it turns out, they did that, which is great. But I also had a lot of questions about – I mean, you hear about it at other companies about how H-1B workers can be treated as a second-class citizen and some pretty bad horror stories.
Well, it's
about
one of those things, if you have an H-1B and you're let go by the company you're from, you only have a very short window to try to get a job that's sponsored again, or you have to leave the country. So there's a bit of power that the company has over you.
Yeah, I'm not an immigration lawyer, but
yeah.
As far as I know, it's legally stipulated to be 0 days.
Oh.
Now, the...
That's stressful.
During immigration, they can write on the note that you have 5 or 10 days, but a lot of people don't have that. They think they've got 5 or 10 days, but legally they actually have nothing.
So theoretically, you could be terminated by a company that was sponsoring you, have to leave the country that day or be doing something illegal.
Yes, that's right.
Ooh, that's kind of creepy, especially in California where it's completely at will.
Yeah, and if you don't leave, you're out of status the next day. And maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not okay. It's a risk you will carry with you for the rest of your career. The one day a visa will be denied because you went out of status. So you kind of don't want to be out of status. And I know people who have, like, they know the flights out of the country in case they lose their job that day. They carry their passports to work. It's pretty stressful to think that,
yeah, that's a little stressful,
like, you lose your job, you have to go to the airport right now and leave just to avoid this out of status stigma, which you'll have for the rest of your life.
Right. You basically, if you don't do it correctly, it might be that you'll never be able to come back to the country or work in the country again.
Yeah. Worst case is that's it. You can't leave. Yeah. I mean, you'll talk to immigration lawyers and they say, hey, we'll handle it for you for a fee. But you don't want to be in that world. You want to avoid it if possible.
So you come to – so people want you here at Netflix. You're being hired and they say, yeah, we'll sponsor your H-1B. So that's just a transfer thing from wherever employee you had before. And then you, of course, want them to help with the green card because then you remove that fear in the future.
Right. And the attitude that Netflix has was I was not treated as I was treated just like any other engineer, and the visa problems, it was just paperwork. It's like, oh, this is paperwork we need to get done for you. Done. Consider it done. And there was no holding it over me. There's no treating me differently. There was no, in return, you need to do this. There's no treating me like an indentured servant or as a visa hostage. I was treated just like any other engineer. I was also paid very well, just like any other engineer. And you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, should they come to the US to work? I'm on a H-1B. And I say, in all honesty, I know one company that treats the visa workers really well, and it's Netflix. Yeah. And if you read the culture deck, it shouldn't really be a big surprise. It's
It makes sense. You know, let's get this done. This is one of those things you need for your job to be effective. Let's get the paperwork done for you.
Yeah. Right.
So you got your green card after a period of time.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. It was less than a year.
Nice. And for that process, Netflix just handled it.
Yeah, Netflix handled it.
Yeah, because there's experts down HR that handle those things.
I had a lot of help from other industry people as well, who I'm grateful for, because you know, it was complicated, but they all got it done. And
I like talking about the other department, because we're both engineers, working a lot with engineers, and the, you know, the company is founded by an engineer, so it does make sense that we all kind of fit in that culture well. So anytime I touch base on other parts of the company, I'm curious if they work the same type of way, and they seem to. I recently bought a house and wanted to take a loan off the 401k I have that we can do, right? And I contacted somebody, and within a minute, they were emailing me back, and then they said, this form, it was all extremely easy. They were professionals, and they wanted to help. And it was friendly. It wasn't even just like, okay, yeah, I'll do the paperwork for you. They were excited about their job, just like I'm excited about my job. So it's neat to see that across the company.
Yeah, and you're right. That's what I had with the immigration. The immigration team, also the recruitment team, just like with engineering, I'm dealing with top performers of their field.
Yeah.
And so I've said this before, if there's only one recruiter you talk to in a year, make it a Netflix recruiter, because they'll be pretty good. One other thing I should mention about the green card is there's this thing that I've seen happen a lot in the past where an engineer gets their green card and they quit work the next day.
Interesting.
Now, why does that happen? It's because
they weren't happy at the job anyway.
They weren't happy, yeah. But like green cards can take 4 years, can take 8 years, they can take many years.
And anytime a process gets changed, it can get delayed.
Right. And at Netflix, you don't see that. Like, I got my green card 2 years ago, and I'm still here. I didn't quit the next day.
Right, right.
And so, like, a lot of engineers, they get their green card. That's it. They're happy. Like, there's nowhere else they want to be. Like, right. you hear about it at other companies. People get their green card, they quit, and then they go to the job they want.
I've had this experience in my career of, you know, deciding I'm going to do something public, like go present a talk or something like that, or launch a little app, or talk more, have somebody interesting on my radio show. And part of the dialogue the entire time is, well, if I do this, my resume looks better and I can get a job better. And it's always just kind of been a running thing. You know, oh, this, now I've done a lecture at a university, that'll go on my CV. Now my resume looks better so I can get a better job. And now that's not a carrot I have anymore, because I'm happy where I am. And I'm not trying to move forward in another place, which is an interesting place to be. Let's talk, though, about, you know, high performers, experts in their field. What about we don't do any kind of internship. We don't do any kind of – like, we're not doing some things that I think are a noble thing to do in some level.
So you're right. We don't do interns. And someone has to do interns. Otherwise, people won't develop.
Yes.
What we are doing is we're serving an important role. There seems to be this idea, especially in Silicon Valley, that engineers are only valuable in their 20s. And so – the companies fight for the young blood, and they want a 20-something engineer. And it's kind of dark if you think about it as an engineer. It's like, well, what happens when I turn 30? And do I then have to retire?
Right. Or move into management.
And also, like, I'm in my 30s, and every year I've become a better engineer. If I look back at myself in my 20s, well, I knew less things and I was less skilled.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of, like, let's just hire the 20-year-olds is a little crazy. And I think Netflix is helping prove that wrong. We aren't picking people based on their age. We're picking people based on their skills. Mm-hmm. It flies in the face of what feels to be this ageist culture in Silicon Valley of only desiring youth.
Yeah. So the other aspect that's kind of potentially a, I wouldn't say necessarily a downside, but a place where it's different than business, other businesses, we have extremely narrow focus on what the business actually is. And a lot of companies will have a broader attack vector, if you will. We have this very much like, we're providing really good streaming to people's homes. Like, that's what we do. And, you know, you can imagine other things that we could do that we just shy away from and stay focused. I think that's probably part of our success as well.
Right. And it's our mission. And it's also, you know, it's really satisfying to work for a company. This is another myth that, that kind of gets busted at Netflix is you said, like, we work to provide streaming to people. And our mission is we build a product that's so good, customers want to buy it. Mm-hmm. And like, that's it. And, you know, there's this cynicism in the industry that, in order to be really competitive, there has to be more than that. You have to be, maybe you have to be selling customers private data on the side or engaging in some shady business practices. And it's really refreshing to work at Netflix and to have such a simple mission. It's like you build a product that people choose to buy. No, and I mean, this is told to us as this is our mission, and it includes the word choose.
Yes.
Because we want to make sure that customers are choosing it.
We aren't tricking them.
Or like, we're not doing lock-in. It always has to be their choice to buy us. And like, you just build a product that's good enough for them. It's such a great mission. So,
you know, it's interesting because it's a very challenging thing to see if you look at the minutiae of a department making a certain amount of money, right? In a traditional business, you'll have a segment that has to pull in a certain amount of revenue. And the truth is, if you lose more customers, you lose the revenue, right? So just try to take in more customers and don't let go of customers. And so if you make that process of leaving harder by take a survey or wait 5 days or send a letter in writing, like all these processes, those are all because when you look at the bottom dollar, those actually make the companies more money. We're in this, we do this other thing where we just don't do those kind of games. And I think, I'm not sure, you know, why we don't do those things, except for to say that that's another cultural aspect, and it's probably because of this mission.
Right. And it's the focus on the choice of the customer rather than trapping them. It's you build it so good they want to stay. And
yeah.
It's great. It's great to work at a company that does that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get a little technical in the last 10 minutes or so. Tell me about what you've been doing with the JVM. The JVM is the Java runtime, the virtual machine that all Java stuff runs in. We use JVM a lot on all the cloud instances are running Java.
So yeah, the JVM, that's the heart of Java. That's what runs. And when I started at Netflix, this wasn't on my project list from Coben, but I found that we couldn't do profiling easily. And profiling is where you paint a picture of what the software is doing. And I noticed it didn't work because the JVM didn't honor a frame pointer. The frame pointer is a special CPU register so that it can walk a stack backtrace. Now, the JVM has its own way of doing stack backtraces. It didn't operate properly with the Linux perf tool, which we're using for profiling. And I was looking at this and thinking, wow, it'd be great if I could get frame pointers to work. It'd be great if I could get perf to work because then I could profile it from Linux easily. I could associate Java stack traces with kernel events like disk IO and TCP, do all these great things. Now, I looked at the JVM and it just didn't support it at all. Now, in a freedom and responsibility moment, I suggested to my manager, why don't I get OpenJDK and start hacking on it and see if I can fix it? Now, I didn't have any prior experience with working on JDK and
JDK is the Java Development Kit. Yep. So this is the build process that makes bytecode that runs on the machine code.
That's right. And the particular component of it is called Hotspot, the Hotspot compiler, C2 compiler. And so I had zero experience at working on this. And you know, at other companies, the manager may say, no, it's not our job. The manager may want to second guess what I'm telling them. I'm telling my manager, I know I've never done this before, but I think I could get this fixed. Like if you give me a few weeks to like get into the code, I reckon I could fix this. And my manager said, sure, you've got it. Take a swing. And so I spent a few weeks and like I had pages of code printed out, stuck around my cubicle. It's a really complicated area. And I figured it out, and I got it to work, and I got a prototype to work. And another freedom of Netflix is I was allowed to immediately make it public and share it with Oracle's JDK team. And so I shared it with them.
Because, of course, even though you were using the OpenJDK, you'd actually like Oracle to put it in there because the kind of de facto Java implementation is Oracle's.
That's right. So I got to, and what I was able to do is do this flame graph visualization with it. And flame graph shows where your code is running. It's people like it. It's this pretty visualization, but it's actually quite useful.
And this actually maps the execution time of the running code inside the JVM, which is a virtual thing, inside a cloud instance, which is a virtual thing, on hardware, all the way back to the source code that the developer like me wrote. So it maps that all that back to you and kind of visualizes your code running in real time.
That's right. And as a developer, it's crucial. You know what's running, what to optimize.
Do you think they're really popular because they're so pretty?
I think that might be part of it. they are pretty. They have that appeal.
Yeah.
And also the color scheme I picked by default makes them pretty, I think. But anyway, I shared it with the Oracle Hotspot team and they integrated it. So
they said, oh yeah, that's great. We got to do this.
Yeah, and they actually had someone rewrite it, Zoltan Mayo. And so he did it all properly and made it parameterized. So it's -XX preserve frame pointer. And so that's now part of the standard JDK.
Yeah.
And it's just I have that opportunity anywhere at Netflix. It's like if I pick an area and I feel I can do it, Netflix will give me the chance to take a swing and do it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not my area.
And it's one of those wonderful things because if you think of like the amount of time you as an engineer work to Netflix, you're paid a salary and you have these things to do. And that one was one of those risky things. Who knows if you'll be able to do it or not? You've never done it before. Also, let's say you do achieve it and it works perfectly and Oracle goes, nah, which they might have done. It's a different company. Who knows? We wouldn't be able to take advantage of it without them kind of re-implement, doing it. So there's all these questions. And from a manager perspective, if it was a broad focus of how many projects am I getting done this month and all of a sudden, Brendan's not available because he's doing this other thing, they might say no. But instead, there's this kind of idea of, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And the truth is it pays off, right? Because now we have stack traces in Java that we can actually – flame graphs, excuse me – that we can actually use for our stuff. So it was a good payoff and probably wouldn't have been able to do it in the traditional business flow.
Yeah, it would have been harder in a traditional business because I was doing something that wasn't part of our charter that I'd not had experience of. And you're right, Netflix rewards wise risk-taking.
Yeah. And I've seen people, take risks that fail and they're not punished by it, right? We definitely have this methodology of testing things and trying things out, and we do that all the time. And more than often, the tests fail. And that's just the way, you learn a lot from your mistakes. I hope that this idea of running a business this way works. I think it has an opportunity to kind of spread in the Silicon Valley, especially in startups, but it will require more people to be aware of it. So thank you for being public about what's going on here and taking the opportunity to chat with me about it as well.
Thanks, Lyle, and thanks for listening.
And you can read more about Brendan Gregg's stuff on his website, and it's brendangregg.com, all one word. And you can find that up at geekspeak.org. I'll link to it. And the blog is wonderful. You have different stories. And of course, if you're interested in detracing and flame graphs and system performances in general, you probably all already know of Brendan, and you can learn more at his website as well. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and he's used permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So use our stuff any way you'd like. Just let them know we made it. I'm Lyle Troxell, and this has been episode 27 of season 17 of GeekSpeak, working at Netflix. Thanks for listening. If you have feedback of our program or want to hear more of our episodes, please feel free to visit us online at geekspeak.org.